Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. TD is here with us for the TD Power Hour. He knows something about Superbook Sports. What's up, TD?
What's going on, man? It's great to be here.
So we got a lot going on. We got this. Basically, the draft season is now officially starting.
Let's go.
We got that to get into. We got an offensive coordinator search. We got quarterback drama. Let's start with the offensive coordinator. Did you hear what Tim Hasselbeck said about his feelings? This was on the midday show yesterday. I'll just play it for the audience. About what he thinks is going to happen at the offensive coordinator position.
So there's been no talk, no movement on the Titans opening. Are you hearing anything there?
I think I said this to you guys maybe before it became, I don't know, maybe before it was public. Like, look, I think it's Matt Nagy. I think the only reason that it's not already Matt Nagy is because the Chiefs are still playing. Like, now, I don't know that. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I feel has happened. And so I think that's the – like, to me, if Kansas City weren't still playing, I feel like it would have been done by now. And I think it's one of these things where it's like, we're not going to go hire someone else because, look, Matt Nagy's not rumored to be getting one of these head coaching jobs that's open. We feel like it's pretty good that it's happening here. And so ultimately, we're just not announcing it now. It's distracting to the Chiefs. Really doesn't matter if we announce it now or we announce it later or we officially decide later. I feel like it's Matt Nagy. Again, I'm not reporting anything. Like you're saying, like, hey, what's my sense? What's my feel? My feel is that it's Matt Nagy, that it's decided. We'll go through some of these exercises along the way here. But ultimately, I think he's the offensive coordinator.
He's been hammering that for weeks. And he made sure to say, I'm not reporting it, but you know as well as I do the difference between I think and I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah. I believe there's some hint that he got somewhere along the line that Matt Nagy, because that's just not a natural correlation that you would make. You know what I mean? So I think, and I actually have a post coming out tomorrow, and I touched on that in regards to that search. But I'm just confused as to, like, what the correlation would be, right? You know, to just randomly be like, hey, I think it's going to be
between Tim and Nagy?
No, for Tim, I don't think Tim is just randomly saying that.
Right. Willie asked him, what was it, 3 weeks ago that Willie asked him?
It's like the 17th of January.
Before they hired Rand Carthon, Willie asked him what he was hearing about the GM search, and he literally said, I don't know anything about the GM search, but I think they're going to hire Matt Nagy as the OC. And it was like, what?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they have the same agent. Who knows?
I literally looked through, like, Tim's playing career and Matt Nagy's, like, coaching career and career to see if there was, like, a...
some type of, yeah.
Right. You know, where it's like, oh, he's pumping his boy up or something like that. I didn't find it.
Yeah. It could be agent. You know, that it could be. But I don't think that would be a bad idea. And everybody bangs on Matt Nagy for what he did in Chicago, and I get it. But one thing that you have to realize is head coach and offensive coordinator. That was a nice play by Jonathan Mingo just now. Head coach and offensive coordinator, like, it's two different things. You know what I mean? Coordinator, coach, two different things. Where you could have a guy who's a really good coordinator but not a good coach. Or conversely, you could have a guy that's not a good coordinator, but a really good coach. And we know a guy like that by the name of Mike Vrabel. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's two different things. But I think if you look at the offense that the Chiefs had, they were always good with Matt Nagy there. And obviously you have the Andy Reid factor coming into it. But the fact of the matter is this was a place where quarterbacks thrive. Alex Smith went there, and he had his best years as a quarterback. And all of a sudden, that hesitant guy that was in San Francisco became a killer. My other thing is this. I feel that Alex Smith and Ryan Tannehill, skill set, style of play, and everything is very similar. So I think if they keep Tannehill, Nagy comes in, that would be really good. But I like prospectus, I guess you could call it.
Oh, my odds?
Yeah, I like what you said about Tim Kelly and then bringing in Charles London as pass game coordinator, as well as helping with Pat O'Hara. we watched the Senior Bowl practices, and you get to see Charles London speak with the quarterbacks, and he's the offensive coordinator down there. I'm impressed, really impressed.
Here's the thing about where it feels like all the chatter is, which is either Matt Nagy or Tim Kelly. That's what feels like the chatter. If they go with Matt Nagy, like I keep thinking about Vrabel in all of this. If they go with Matt Nagy, that's not a Vrabel guy. And Vrabel exactly. is, you know, if Vrabel's hiring somebody, there's a 90% chance that he worked with him at the Texans or worked with him at Ohio State or he coached him at New England or something like that. And so if you're going to bring in Matt Nagy, basically, in my opinion, you're farming out that side of the ball to Matt Nagy and you're like, mm-hmm. you're in charge. Mm-hmm. But he's got an offensive coaching staff in place. So you're going to have Matt Nagy work with Pat O'Hara and you're not going to let Matt Nagy bring his own quarterback coach in?
I think you could still find common ground as sure. as a staff, right? Rob Moore could help the receivers.
I'm
run
not worried about Rob Moore and Tony Dudes. Those guys would be
they're,
fine.
They're legit, yeah. And then remember, the offensive line coach is still to be found. But the quarterback's coach, I mean, Pat O'Hara, he played the game and he's been around for a while. I'm sure that they could make that situation work. I don't see that being an issue.
I think, though, like, is Vrabel really going to hire somebody that he doesn't know to run the offense and be like, here's your offense, go take care of it for me, and I'm going to stay over here with the defense and my play sheet? That doesn't seem like Vrabel.
That doesn't, because you watch him at practice, and I tell him about it all the time. I love following him around. I say, Coach, I get my steps in following you around because you go from position to position to position. He wants to be involved in all aspects of the game. And I don't know that it would be his style to just pass it off and say, here. But that's one of the signs of a great leader. You empower people who are working with you to do what they do, and you step out the way and let them go. And I think that's something that Matt Nagy is obviously capable of doing. But then it also goes back to one of the things I said. I asked him about loyalty, right? And he was like, you know, he wants coaches who aren't having an eye on the next step beyond where they are now. So it's like, okay, Matt Nagy comes in, that offense gets right. I could see him being a head coach candidate. Because if you take this offense, it was averaging 17.5 points a game and 5 points in the second half, and turn it into a resemblance of the offense in 2020?
He'll be like Dan Quinn. Everybody thought Dan Quinn was a bozo in Atlanta, and Dan Quinn got fired.
Exactly.
And now Dan Quinn's had 2 good years with the Cowboys, and now everybody's like, Dan Quinn!
That's the next head coach. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm curious about as well.
So I still think – this is my theory. And I have nothing to be able to really – like, it's all speculation. It's a theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is ownership. If they hire Matt Nagy, I think that that is, and it's not ownership telling Vrabel, you need to hire Matt Nagy. It's more so the, why can't we be like the Chiefs? Yeah. Why can't we be like the Eagles? We want to be like the Chiefs. We want to be like the Eagles. And Nagy is the most likely choice because unless Bieniemy gets a head coaching job, he's not going to be the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. And that Bears contract runs out this year for Matt Nagy. So, you know, he would have to make some serious money. Mm. And you're not going to be able to do that as the quarterback coach in Kansas City. So you come here and it's like, hey, we'll give you $4 million or $3 million or whatever. And you run the offense. And I just don't think, I think Vrabel would hate that. Like if the owner is saying to him, like, why can't we be like the Chiefs? And so now he's got to go hire a Chiefs coordinator. Like,
yeah,
that
and that's the thing.
We'll see.
And you know that physicality aspect is something that has to be in the offense. So there's going to have to be some type of compromise on Nagy's part as well. Because, I mean, those Chiefs teams with him, I almost said Priest Holmes. It was, what's my man from?
Jamal Charles.
Not Charles. It was after Charles.
LeSean McCoy.
No, he went to he's with the Browns now.
Kareem Hunt.
He was running the ball pretty well with them. So they still could run the football, you know what I mean, in that scheme. So I just think it's really going to take compromise on both sides.
Do you think that the players the Titans have can run that scheme?
They're going to have to get some guys. We keep talking about Mecole Hardman.
Any kind of scheme, but definitely if they switch schemes, you think they'll have to get guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you could work it with Westbrook and Kenny as a number four, not a two, you know what I mean? But Burks, I feel Burks could play in any form of football on this planet. Mm-hmm. He's just that good of a player. And then Woods, or as we mentioned, you know, if they move on from Woods and bring in a cheaper guy, then, you know, you're going to have to bring in at least two or three receivers. I mentioned Jonathan Mingo earlier, you know, as a play that he made. That's a guy. You look at A.T. Perry. Man.
Where do these guys go to school?
So A.T. Perry is from Wake Forest. He's shy. You can see him tonight in the Shrine game. Jonathan Mingo, Ole Miss guy. Body type-wise, he's going to remind you of A.J. when you see him. I don't know that he's the same type of explosive player as A.J., but they used him the same. Mm-hmm. So I think when you look at Mingo, you look there's a receiver out of Houston. They call him Tank. Whew, you talk about gas. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys, and everybody talks about Quentin Johnson, but, man, Zay Flowers from Boston College is somebody.
I watched him single-handedly light Louisville on fire.
He is a monster.
It reminded me, watching Zay Flowers tear up Louisville reminded me of my senior year where I was standing in the corner of the end zone and I watched T.Y. catch six balls for 200 yards.
My college quarterback was his special teams coach. Yeah.
And he was like, this guy is, and that's what I saw with Zay Flowers. I do wonder, can Tannehill run that scheme? Can he run the Andy Reid scheme?
I think Tannehill is just, and I mentioned earlier, right, that he and Alex Smith are very similar in skill set. Sure. You're not going to get the same crazy ad-lib plays that Mahomes gives you, but as far as keeping on schedule, taking the deep shot when necessary, being safe with the football, absolutely. He can run that scheme, 100%.
I was just comparing in my head Alex Smith and Tannehill. I think Alex Smith is probably a smarter player and maybe a more mobile player. I think Tannehill probably has more arm talent between the two.
I think Tannehill has more arm talent and is more mobile. Really? Tannehill's a dad. He's an athlete, man. That dude is an athlete. And you sit there and you watch, you know, some of the boots and stuff, and you see him running with the football. When I think of Alex Smith, I always think of the 25-yard touchdown he had against the Saints in 2011. Mm-hmm. To put them ahead, and there was a couple other back and forth. But anyway, Tannehill, to me, is a better athlete than Alex Smith. We got to remember, he was a D1 receiver and a pretty good one at A&M before switching over to quarterback.
TD is with us. Speaking of Tannehill, the quarterback position, now that my dream is crushed of Tom Brady coming to the Titans, what does TD think about what's next for the Titans at the position? We'll get to that. 615-737-1025. Hit your questions for TD at the end of the hour, as we always do. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
Ryan, how have you learned how to kind of deal with the uncertainty of what lies ahead? I mean, I know it's part of the business, but everyone gets used to it at their own pace, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not the fun part of the business, but it's something that, like you said, you do get used to over time. Just kind of have to take it as it comes, you know, keep your mind in a good space, keep the people around you that support you and care about you, and just build those relationships, lean on those relationships, and just take it how it comes.
There you go. That was Ryan Tannehill on Locker Cleanout Day. We have not heard from Ryan Tannehill, and I don't plan on hearing from Ryan Tannehill anytime soon. TD is with us for the TD Power Hour. And so, this time last year, TD, I was doing all the yelling and screaming about not bringing Tannehill back, and the Titans were doing all the Tannehill's our guy, we're going forward with Tannehill, we're going to get better around Tannehill, which they did not do, we're going to, you know, all these things. Now the Titans are like, we'll see. We'll see. And that led Ian Rappaport today to speculate that the Titans could move off of Tannehill and go with Jimmy Garoppolo, and I went and screamed and went crazy when I heard that. So my question for you is, now the dream of Brady is gone, what do you think of the Titans' lukewarm commitment to Tannehill, if you even want to call it that, so far through the offseason?
I really don't have a problem with what Rand Carthon said about Tannehill, and it made sense. And I remember sitting right here in this chair and telling you this is probably what he's going to say. Mm-hmm. You know, and as he said, people get hired and fired based upon the quarterback position.
And he's not wrong about that.
Not wrong at all. So for him to stand up there and say, hey, that's the quarterback, or say, hey, would have been the wrong thing. So I think continuing to get a better assessment. And what's one of the other things that he always says, at least in the time that we've gotten to deal with him, in regards to evaluating players or even just the whole process? I want to know the guy outside, off of the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that I think also has a lot to do with it. And you look at some of the intangibles that Tannehill has, those are the aspects outside of the toughness. You know, and we chatted about the athleticism too. So I don't think that it's necessarily lukewarm as much as it's – now, I got to see what's up for real.
Do you think that they could be trying to get Tannehill to take a pay cut?
Yeah.
That they could be, you know, as opposed to Ryan's our guy, this idea of, you know, we're scheduled to pay you 27, but we could move on to Baker Mayfield for 13. And so, you know, maybe you'd be better off at maybe you'd be better off at 22 instead of 27 or something like that, that this could all be a negotiating ploy. Because people will talk about like Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, and I don't think those guys are good enough, like better enough than Tannehill, that it would be worth the money that it would cost to bring those guys in, plus the money you've already paid to Tannehill, and then that guy has to learn like a whole new team and everything else. If we're bringing in Rodgers, it's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, to me, I mean, I don't think Derek Carr is better than Tannehill. I really don't think any of these guys are better than Tannehill. Like maybe Daniel Jones because of his age, but they're going to keep Daniel Jones in New York. I think this all may be a ploy just to get him to take a pay cut.
I don't know that the public non-support is that, but I would imagine as they're going through and looking at the numbers and things like that, I would imagine that's something that they're angling towards. Even an extension to push this money. Because if you look, so next year his cap hit is 4.6. Now, base salary and signing bonus is done. He just has the restructure for 4.6, and if they cut him, it's 9.2.
Because it'll all accelerate up into the – you know how I feel about the cap, TD.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still – it's something that it's a guideline. I don't know that it's necessarily realistic as far as, like, end-all, be-all, but I think it's a guideline.
Sure.
So that being said, it's a tool that allows them to control player contracts. Let's say it that way.
I think it's a tool that allows them to lie to fans about why they trade Tyreek Hill.
Again, allows them to control player contracts. So I could see them shifting some of that to next year. And we know the cap is going up, and we know they'll be in a pretty good place next year as far as the cap is concerned.
So I don't think it's about the cap and wanting Tannehill to take a pay cut. I think it's about the money. I think it's about I don't want to pay you $27 million.
I think it is about the cap as far as an overall big picture. They want to make that number more manageable so they could go out and do other things with players. Resign Nate Davis.
Sure.
Right? Resign David Long. Tier Tart's going to have to get a tender. You know, there's guys, there's free agents there. You know, so
and you saw what Tier Tart did, right?
What'd he do?
He signed with Drew Rosenhaus.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I feel bad for his agent that was with him when he was an undrafted free agent.
That's cold, man. That agent business is nasty.
Oh, it's bad.
It's nasty.
It's
man.
Bad. And you know, like, I'll see it sometimes, like, training camp. Like, I'll be leaving the facility, and I will see, like, things where I'm like, should you be talking to him like that?
Yeah, yeah.
But
a lot of times it's fellow players, too, because – and
oh, yeah.
I'll just leave that story out. But a lot of times it's players, too, and they're able to get a discount on their rate by adding other players.
That's bull crap.
I learned that in 2016 with one of the Ravens receivers. He brought a couple other guys in, and he got a discount. And it was with Rosenhaus, by
That's like my gym, that if you refer somebody, they give you, like, the next month or whatever.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, though, like, I go back to this. I think that the Titans, this is where I could see kind of a showdown going on. Tannehill's got that number at 30-something million dollars against the cap, and they'll have to do something if they want to lower it, and he has to agree to whatever it is in order for them to lower it. I think the Titans don't want to pay Tannehill $27 million. I think they think, hey, if we could pay Ryan Tannehill $19 million as opposed to $27 million, then we can go spend $8 million somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm Tannehill, I'm looking at it like $27 million for me is a steal. $27 million. Kyler Murray is $46 million. Deshaun Watson, who may end up playing better when he has a full year and everything else under his belt, but Deshaun Watson, the going rate, like I think Daniel Jones signs for about $42 million a year, somewhere in that ballpark. So the going rate.
I think they're going to tag him.
They might. But again, the cap, then it's a $33 million cap hit on Daniel Jones as opposed to you pay him $42 million and then the cap number, whatever. But I go back to like $27 million for Tannehill is probably a bargain.
Yeah, it
so
is
if you're Tannehill and they want you to take a pay cut, it's like no.
But again, it doesn't necessarily have to be that haircut, right? It could be just a shift. You know what I mean? Like you could shift money to the next year because.
But not if the Titans want the money. You know what I'm saying?
If they. Yeah, if they want the money just outright,
that's what
cash.
I think it is.
Yeah, okay, you're right. If you're talking about actual cash,
yeah.
But if you're talking about massaging the guideline,
like when the
then
Titans,
that's a different story.
When the Titans traded Jarrell Casey for a seventh, and everybody was like, a seventh?
Yeah, but there was $11.5 million.
Like the next day.
Yeah.
And Floyd told me that he thought that the Titans probably called Casey in, and they were like, hey, we need you to take a pay cut. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take a pay cut, we have to move on. Mm-hmm. And that Casey probably was like, oh, no, I think I'm worth it to this. I'm a captain. Mm-hmm. I deserve my $11 million. And they traded him to Denver.
I believe he's represented by Rosenhaus.
He is represented by Rosenhaus.
Tier tart.
I wonder if that's, you know, with Tannehill, you know, here's the dilemma, right? You call in Tannehill. You tell Tannehill, like, hey, we, you know, want to work out something. You know, phony it up however you want for the cap, but we want you to take a pay cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Tannehill says, well, $27 million again for me is a bargain. I'm not going to do that. Then the Titans have the choice to make. Okay, do you move off Tannehill and go pay somebody else? But the chances of you paying less than $27 million and getting a good player are not very high.
And that's the thing. That's the thing. Like you mentioned Baker Mayfield, which I would.
You hate Baker Mayfield.
I don't think that he's what a lot of people make him out to be. So you look at that
from a talent standpoint or Baker the guy?
Everything.
Really?
Everything. Yeah. He's shown it. He's shown it. But you look, they released Tannehill, so it's 18.8, and you give Baker a $15 million. Now you're right at 32.
Mm-hmm. But again, if you phony up the – you know – if we're just talking cash, though, you went from 27 to 15.
If you're talking cash.
Right.
Right. But at the same time, I think for what you're trying to do, as far as reestablish a culture and maintain it.
Sure.
I don't bring Baker in for that.
No. And on top of it, like all the other guys, I mean, I know that people on TV and in the media kind of knock on Tannehill a little bit. I mean, I think the Washington Commanders would pay Ryan Tannehill $27 million to be their quarterback.
In a heartbeat.
And so
Carolina would do it too.
Right.
In a heartbeat.
So if I'm Tannehill and they call me into the office and they want me to take a pay cut off $27 million, I'm going to say no. Because I'm probably worth $30 million, $32 million on the open market.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, that's the tough part. And what I really want to know, and they will never tell you this, what's the budget this year?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's the budget? Not just, like, the money that they pay to the players, but that fake money that they have to pay in order to spread things out. To get, like, the Saints get themselves out of cap trouble every year.
Every year.
By spending more money. You know, the Rams do the same thing.
Eagles did it a couple years ago. Brought up when they signed Javon Hargrave. They were like 20, 24 over the cap.
It's like your ESPN Saints colleague in an article that you were a part of which I actually meant to ask you what you would accept from the Jets for Tannehill, because you turned down a fourth-round pick for Tannehill in the article. But she was like, give Jimmy Garoppolo $66 million, $44 guaranteed, and a $20 million signing bonus. I'm like, cap's fake. $60 million over the hole. Let's give Jimmy Garoppolo $20 million tomorrow. But I do wonder, like, what is the budget? Because things like the new stadium and having 90 players the last 2 years, those things do matter. Like, when you talk to the people over there that care about the bottom line, that matters.
Yeah, that definitely matters. That's a big factor.
And that's why, like, Joe and I were arguing about the cap, and we're talking about Jonnu Smith. And he's like, you know, they couldn't keep Jonnu Smith because of the cap. And I'm like, no, I think what they did was they said the money that we would spend on Davis and Jonnu Smith, we're going to spend on Bud Dupree and Danico Autry because our defense was so bad last year. But that's just, I digress. I'm going on a rant about the cap, and I don't want to do this every day. 615-737-1025. We'll get in your questions for TD at the end of the hour, as we always do. 615-737-1025. QB shuffle. We got teams, quarterbacks all over the place. What does TD make of it? We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 the game.
The culture, like, they're done with dealing with veteran quarterbacks who come in and just don't fit the bill. They have a great roster. They do. A great roster on both sides of the ball. They have a run game. They have a solid defense. They need to get that quarterback. And so why wouldn't you pick from 4 to 1, move up, whatever it takes? Like, next year's 2, next year's 1, go get that guy. I would make it Bryce Young. Maybe it's C.J. Stroud for you or Will Levis, whatever you want to say. But my point is, I think that number one pick is going to be worth a lot.
Todd McShay, ESPN, talking about the Colts and their quarterback situation. TD is with us for the TD Power Hour. How do you feel about playing some QB shuffle?
We can do that.
Okay, let's start with the Colts. We don't know who the coach is going to be. And it sounds like, and I haven't read too much into it, but it sounds like Chris Ballard is trying to do everything possible to convince Jim Irsay not to hire Jeff Saturday, but that Jim Irsay is probably going to hire Jeff Saturday. I agree with McShay. I think the Colts are done with the veteran quarterback market. What do you think Indianapolis is thinking?
Yeah, I think they are done with that also, and especially having this pick that they have. I mean, there's a good chance that a Will Levis falls to them at 4. You know, so they could stay put and go with him. But I think in this situation, you go get the best quarterback in the draft. I agree with McShay. The Bears, they don't want to, even though Mike Tannenbaum is beating this to death. And Mike T, that's my dog, but stop it. They're not going to trade Justin Fields. They're not going to do that. They've already invested time in him. And I know it's a different ownership group, or not ownership, but different staff, whatever, different GM.
Administration,
yeah. I know that's the case, but they're not going to move on. So they could flip that one into more picks, still get the guy that they would have taken at one in a Will Anderson or a Jalen Carter, and have more picks. So I don't see why they wouldn't do that. I think it's a great exchange to go from 4 to 1, get another first, and get a second also. That's what I think is going to happen.
What I think is crazy is I think at that point, you know, the best thing for Chicago is they can leverage Houston and the Colts against each other. Because you have to hope that they like the same guy. Because if they don't, then you're screwed. But you have to hope they like the same guy and then leverage them. And then what they're going to do is they're going to be throwing smoke signals at each other, like Mike Tomlin last year stalking Malik Willis. You know, they're going to be doing that so that they think, oh, no, I like this guy, but I really like that guy. And so that takes me to the Texans, D'Amico Ryan's in there at number 2. Well, if you were Houston, with what you think of these three quarterbacks, would you stay at 2 and pick, risk the possibility the Colts jump you or somebody else, or would you try to move up to 1 and make sure that you get the guy you like in this class?
I think it really comes down to whether or not they fall in love with a particular prospect.
Are you in love with any of the three?
I think C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young are 1A, 1, and number 1. So, and if it were me, I would do like the Eagles did in 2016. Okay, we know more than likely Goff is going to go at 1. Let's go to 2. We like Carson Wentz just the same, and take Wentz. You know what I mean? And I think that's what the Bears should do, just, or excuse me, the Texans remain at 2. But I love the little jab and the punch in the ribs that Lovey gave them going out.
Here's what bothers me about the quarterbacks in this class. What? Will Levis has the total package in terms of his ability to throw, his size, he's got some mobility, all of those things, but he stinks too much this past season as far as the way he played. C.J. Stroud has the size, he has the speed, but he never really lit it up. And he was good in that Georgia
game. He lit that up.
But yeah. It's still like I actually had the behind the play camera for that on ESPN, and I was watching that. And every throw he made was just so open.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you have to have a little bit of trepidation about with some of these quarterbacks. As you mentioned, everyone was so open. And then not to mention, he had an NFL group of receivers.
Yeah, I mean, like, Marvin Harrison is legit.
Yeah, like even you look last year, Jackson Smith and Jigba. You had Garrett Wilson, the guy you like, Chris Olave, you know, and then you had – Marvin Harrison, you had Julian Fleming. Like, there's a lot of receivers there. So that is something that you have to look at. I'm not going to discount what he was able to do, but you do have to consider that.
And then Bryce Young, I thought, was incredible. He's just too small.
I think with Bryce Young, the big thing is the durability aspect.
Yeah, right? Because of the size.
Because of the size. Is he a guy that could sit in that pocket and get banged up, you know, like Joe Burrow did? I swear to God, my respect for him went up immensely after that divisional game a couple years ago. But can Bryce Young hang around and be able to do that? That's the thing that you have to wonder.
Okay, the Raiders, they have the 7th pick. Brady's out. So what do you think the Raiders do?
Well, you saw what Davante Adams said, come to my house, you know, to Aaron Rodgers. I think that's an intro. What pick did you say they have?
7.
7. I mean, that's another one you could – if Will Levis is there, I mean, he could possibly drop to that. But I think that they compete with the Jets to try to get Aaron Rodgers, to be honest with you. That's how I look at that one.
You know what I think would be crazy? Who says no? The 7th overall pick for Mac Jones.
Oh, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
I mean, if you're
far
McDaniels.
As far as if I'm the Patriots, you're darn right. You want to give me the 7th for Mac Jones?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's what I'm saying, is because McDaniels, if he thinks Jones, like if he likes Mac Jones better than Will Levis and he likes Mac's age better than Jimmy, then I'd deal the 7th, get my quarterback. I've got my receivers. I got my tight end.
I forgot about Jimmy. That's the direction they go.
Jimmy?
Yeah. That's where they go.
49ers.
They're going to stand pat. They're not going to trade Trey Lance. You got Brock Purdy. So you go February, March, April, May, June, July, 6 months. They said that he should be throwing in 3 to 6. Hey, the problem kind of got solved for them, right? Because now you got Trey Lance coming off. You just got to pray that he doesn't get hurt. I think they stand pat.
Buccaneers.
I could see the Bucs trying to contact the Titans for Tannehill.
I had thought the whole time that the Buccaneers, during the 2020 offseason, when we were talking about Brady or Tannehill or whatever, we were wondering, is there a market for Tannehill? Like Floyd and I would talk about, is there? And I always looked at the Buccaneers as the team.
Yeah, the Bucs and Jets are two teams I could see posturing for Tannehill.
By the way, you turned down a 4th-round pick from the Jets in the ESPN.com article. What would you have accepted? Would you have accepted a 3rd-round pick for Tannehill?
That's where it would have started at, the 3rd-round pick. Yeah, that's where it would have started.
Okay, Falcons.
I think Desmond Ridder remains their guy. But you know what I would do if I'm Chris Fontenot? I'm getting on the phone and talking. Just at least talk to the Ravens. At least
about
talk
Lamar?
To them. Yes.
Here's the problem about Lamar. The reason why they're not signing Lamar is because they don't want to give him that fully guaranteed contract. I don't think any other owner is going to want to give him the fully guaranteed contract. I could be wrong about that.
Arthur Blank loved Michael Vick.
And I know, I'm not but saying the they're fully the same. Guaranteed. And he how would was, he feel if he had given Michael Vick a fully guaranteed contract?
Oh, yeah, that would have been a problem. But back then, it was foreign to those things. But I believe Michael Vick was the first $100 million football player, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So he's not afraid to set a precedent.
Packers.
Jordan Love. I don't see why you know, I think they trade Rodgers to one of these teams, probably the Jets. And I think Jordan Love is your guy. You got 2 years with him. You figure it out.
Jets.
I think Aaron Rodgers, that's where he
goes. You think this time the rolling out of the red carpet that the Broncos did last year and didn't get him, you think this year it gets him?
I think it does, and it's not necessarily – yeah, I think it does.
All right, we're right to your phones for TD next, 615-737-1025, and our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. TD Power Hour, Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game. Stillman & Company, TD Power Hour. TD, do you have a thought or do you want to go right to the questions?
To the questions.
Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. Kinston says, TD, do you think the Titans – could flip Nicholas Petit-Ferrer to left tackle and go find a right tackle instead of having to look for a left tackle?
Yeah, I think that could very much happen. And it's funny because when we were talking about the Ohio State tackle down there at the Senior Bowl, I could see that being the case. Now, this dude, 6'8", 359.
DeJuan Jones, I think is his name.
Yeah, and you watch those one-on-ones. I watched some of the practice film. Like, this dude was putting hands on guys and burying them. Like, putting him under, like 6 feet dead, you know. So
you're not worried though about Petit-Ferrer at left tackle? I mean, I'm a little worried about Petit-Ferrer at right tackle right now.
I wouldn't worry about him at left tackle. I'm not truly worried about him at right tackle if, you know, I was looking at it from that perspective, because there's always room to gain. This was a third round pick who started. You know what I mean? So I think that there's room to gain.
If you're a starting tackle, if you're supposed to be a starting tackle, you go at 13. You don't go in the third round. So he was probably a year behind. I think my thing with Petit-Ferrer that bothers me a little bit is that I think he's got the I think he's got like the measurables, the talent. I wonder if he's got the dog in him.
Yeah, I mean, you go offensive line, you want Trevor Pennings, right? You want guys who
Runyon.
You know, like, hey, if there's even a sniff of a rumble about to happen, he's going to go ramp with you. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I get that. I think Petit-Ferrer, he's probably not the first to jump into a fight, but I think he's someone that could continue to be technically sound. You got the long arms with him, the athleticism. He has those traits.
Texter asks, if they fill out the offensive line in the wide receiver room through free agency, what position would you prioritize at number 11?
Ooh, they fill out both of those positions through free agency. You know, we're going to change Rand Carthon to Jesus Carthon, because that's going to be hard. But if that were the case, I mean, at 11, you know, a Joey Porter would be pretty, right? You solidify the secondary. That would be good. I think regardless, it's going to be O-line, receiver, corner, somewhere in that order that they get.
I think that if they were to figure out wide receiver before the draft, it would involve using the 11th overall pick. Because I just don't think the free agent market is going to allow you to fix it the way that they want it fixed.
Yeah. I think you're not going to get a total offense changer in free agency. I think you could get a discounted type of guy. But, I mean, I'm going to say it again.
You get Amari Cooper, that kind of player.
You can move back in this draft and get a guy like Zay Flowers. And I think you're sitting pretty, because Zay Flowers is going to be good. Quentin Johnson, I think, is going to be good. But it's just, as I watch more of him and not just highlights, it's like, I don't know, man.
Really?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
Well, there are times where he disappears in games.
I don't like that.
And then also,
Corey Davis.
Also, being the big guy that he is, I wonder, like, how is he going to do against press? See, Zay Flowers, he ain't going to struggle against press because he has that wiggle to him. You know what I mean? And you saw him do that in Shrine Week practices, the couple times he did, the couple days that he did practice. So there's that. But then also, Steve Smith made an excellent point, and I retweeted it. He talked about Quentin Johnson and making him fall in love with him. And he showed a couple clips. Now, this dude is 6'4", right? And he's going up, supposedly high pointing the ball, but he's jumping up and catching it at his waist. No. You got to jump up. How you get rebounds?
Yeah, you
jump
up and you get it
above. Yeah, so that's another thing.
Andrew says, TD, call me crazy, but rounds 4 through 7, I want nothing but receivers with blazing speed. Who has the cheetah speed that will get me excited?
In rounds 4 through 7, I think Tank's going to go earlier than that. But
where's he at?
He's out of Houston. He's probably going to go 2 or 3. He's very much like, remember Tutu Atwell?
Yeah.
Very much like him.
Although Tutu drove me crazy because he'd catch the ball every other play.
Yeah. Now, Tank is more consistent, and he gives you return. But, I mean, you look at a guy like a Jalen Reed out of Michigan State. He could be one of those fourth-round types, burners. The Princeton receiver is another burner. Andre Isovia, I can never pronounce his last name. He's a heptathlete. He ran the fastest 60-meter in the heptathlon. He's another one.
Philip in Franklin says, put Will Levis in Tuscaloosa or Columbus. With those offensive line and skill players, what would you have gotten?
I'm curious what you would have gotten. And that's something that you always have to consider, but unfortunately you can't do that, right? And you can only go off of what is there.
Always tell me about the 95 draft, put McNair at Penn State, put Collins at Alcorn State. That was the way that he viewed putting McNair ahead of Kerry Collins.
Yeah, and I think McNair, you had the athletic aspect also, and just that arm, that dude's arm was crazy.
By the way, I just reading this text from Mark in Clarksville. This came about 10 minutes ago. TD, I'm not sure if you've watched much of Andre Isovius, the wide receiver from Princeton, but I think the Titans may need to grab him. He might be the fastest wide receiver in the draft and could be a deep threat they would need. What are your thoughts?
Hey, I told you.
Austin from Clarksville says, a lot of the high-end offensive linemen, including Trent Williams, were not first or second-round draft picks, and look at them now. Yeah. Do you think that the Titans could develop guys like that?
Yeah. I don't know about developed guys like that. That's something that remains to be seen. And we don't know who the O-line coach is. But, I mean, you look at a Darnell Wright from Tennessee. He's probably a second round. He's someone I could see being around there at that 40. What did they pick? 41. Yeah, so I could see him being there. There's a few in this draft. And you even look at DeJuan Jones. Like, I could see him being there also. So, yeah, I mean, that's 100% right. You look. One of the best offensive linemen ever, Jason Peters, I don't believe he was drafted. You know what I mean? And he was a tight end, and he switched over to tackle.
The thing I've learned about the draft is that in about a month and a half, we'll all pretty much have an idea of where everybody thinks everybody's going to go. And then on draft night, we'll be sitting there saying, like, I thought this guy was going to go with the 13th pick, and now he's here at 44, and I, you know, and it happens every year.
Mm-hmm. You always have guys who you're like, dang, I didn't think he was going to go that high, a la Dexter Lawrence, who ended up being an outstanding tackle.
I mean, last year we kept talking about those guards, Zion Johnson and Kenyon Green, and we were like, yeah, they'll probably be there at the 27th pick or whatever the Titans are picking. It's like,
they were gone.
12th overall. It's like, whoa now.
Yep.
And I
remember
use...
Eric McCoy, the Oklahoma center. It was like that with him. You know, he was another one.
Floyd wanted him bad when they ended up drafting
Nate
Davis.
Floyd and I were on the same page with him.
He wanted him bad. Ryan in Nashville says, TD, is there a corner or a linebacker in the draft that has speed that you would like for the Titans?
Yes. Oh, my God. His name just slipped. Riley Moss. Iowa. I've been watching this.
Corner or linebacker?
Corner. He's got 10 picks in his career.
10 picks in 3 years.
You know what happens, right? Kevin Byers showed you. I don't know how many picks he had. He had a bunch at MTSU.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what he got in the league? A bunch. Riley Moss. And he's someone that will surprise you as far as, like, if you look at him, you're like, oh, it's a white corner. I don't know. But then you see him get out there on that field and move and run. That dude could cook.
A young Jason Sehorn.
That's the natural correlation. You know what I mean? But he could cook. Now, I watched him today, and he lined up on the wrong side, and they ran at him. The Illinois running back came at him, and he tried to come in there and meet him, and he got trucked. But you don't pay your corners to take on running backs one-on-one. You want them to cover, and he's a guy that could definitely, definitely cover. People are going to put him off as a safety. He's a corner, and I like him.
Texter says, TD, do you believe that the Titans – will have the ability to compete next season?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they surely will have the ability. The division continues to be wide open, right? And obviously the Texans are going to get better. Obviously, the Colts are going to get better. The Jaguars are what they are. But
not if they hire Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a different conversation. But I think the Titans could absolutely get better. And the good thing is there's a lot of options. You know, they have pretty solid draft capital. They're going to pick in the top 11 of every round. And then on top of that, you know, they're going to do some different things to free up some money to go get some guys too.
Here's the thing that I want everybody to remember. Everything went wrong for the Titans this season, literally everything, and they were 2 minutes and 50 seconds away from making the playoffs.
From making the playoffs.
I mean, like, that's...
A monumental losing streak occurred. Like, think about this. Before the losing streak, you know, they were 7-3 and trending towards...
Oh, when we were running through the Chicago airport, we thought the Titans were right there in the AFC with everybody
exactly.
else.
Exactly, and even after the loss to the Chiefs. You look at the Bengals game.
4 points.
You look at the Bengals game.
Don't hit the snapper in the head. You got a chance to win that game. TD, as always, great stuff. Talking with TD, what's on the podcast?
Yeah, well, we dug into some Senior Bowl and even took it all the way back to the Collegiate Bowl. Emory Hunt, a lot of people, you know, we look at these different channels. You see McShay, you see Mel Kiper, you see all these. Nobody's better than Emory. And I say that because, and Jordan Reed, I'll mention my guy Jordan Reed, but he goes to everything. You know what I mean? I know you don't like the top three pick by Malik Willis. That projection.
The only thing is Jordan Reed last year had a mock draft and had Malik at 2 to the Lions, and I have never been able to forgive him for that.
Yeah, he may have gotten a tip like that. That was something. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I get it. But so we got Emory Hunt on. And every All-Star game that there is. We talked about it. So you got him, Chris Sanders. We talked quarterbacks. And then I gave my opinion on this OC search. So that's what we got cooking.
Shrine Bowl tonight.
Shrine Bowl tonight.
NFL Network. TD will be all over it. TD, great stuff. As always, we'll see you next week. Tomorrow, you will have a full breakdown on the morning show about the Shrine Bowl. I already know it.
That's right. Looking forward to it.
Appreciate you, TD. TD, as always, with us here on the TD Power Hour. So something that I heard. Now, I'm just going to be honest with you. Something that I heard got me worried about Rand Carthon. We'll get to that coming up next. Stoneman & Company right here, 102.5, 106 through the game.